All right, everybody, welcome back to the Fitz News Studios for another edition of Your Week in Review. I'm glad you've joined us. We've got a big update this week on a major investigation into one of South Carolina's most powerful politicians. We're going to give you all the latest on the criminal inquiry into Todd Rutherford. I also sat down with our reporter, Andy Fancher. He filed a big report this week on an instance of animal cruelty in Lawrence County, South Carolina. The only difference in this case, the cops are the ones responsible. I'm going to walk you through that story with Andy as he shares how that story came to us, what happened, and where it's going. Last but not least, I'm going to be on the hot spot. Our producer, Dylan Nolan, is going to sit down and walk you through our take on the big presidential debate that took place in Tuscaloosa, Alabama this past week. I was fortunate enough to attend that debate. We're going to walk through not only perceptions from that event, but some other matters that you may be interested in hearing as it relates to Fitz News and our future as we cover the 2024 presidential primaries. All that and much more coming your way on the Week in Review. So a little over 3 months ago, in late August of this year, our media outlet exclusively reported that one of the most powerful politicians in South Carolina was the focus of a corruption investigation. I'm referring to Todd Rutherford, the minority leader in the South Carolina House of Representatives and one of the members of the legislative panel that picks judges here in South Carolina. If you are a regular viewer of the Week in Review, subscriber to FitzNews.com, you know all about Todd Rutherford. He is the poster child for our corrupt judicial system. He is one of the powerful lawyer legislators who uses and abuses his influence to keep violent criminals out on the street, materially eroding public safety here in South Carolina. We've written about him often. We've covered stories involving him often. So the fact that he was part of an investigation shouldn't be surprising. But unfortunately, the investigation is not centered around Rutherford's participation in one of these extrajudicial, unconstitutional, illegal releases of inmates from our correctional system. If you recall, Rutherford was at the very center of a huge scandal that turned gang leader and convicted killer Jared Price back on the streets with more than a decade and a half left on his mandatory minimum sentence. Now, to our knowledge, Rutherford is not currently under investigation related to that travesty. He should be. But this investigation, according to our sources, stems from allegations raised way back in 2021 involving the state budget. We're talking specifically here about earmarks, about secretive spending items that are tucked into the state's $30 billion-plus budget and routed to lawmakers, to their spouses, to their family members. It's a very corrupt process, and several members of the General Assembly alerted state law enforcement division agents and ethics investigators to Rutherford allegedly misappropriating taxpayer dollars through this earmark process. Now, did he? Again, at this point, nothing has been laid out against him. He has not been charged. All we know at this point is that there is an active investigation. And when we first reported on this, Rutherford claimed that his opponents were, quote, making shit up. That was his response to the allegations that were leveled against him. Now, we don't know the origins of the criminal inquiry against Rutherford. What we know is that there are two agencies reportedly involved, the South Carolina State Law Enforcement Division and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. As we reported in August, Rutherford's bank records were subpoenaed in connection with this inquiry. But again, that doesn't really give us any indication of what track it's going down. We do know that the initial allegations were related to those budget appropriations and potential misappropriation on Rutherford's part. But again, no specifics. What we do know is that this past week, Todd Rutherford made not one, but two visits to a SLED facility located on Bush River Road in downtown Columbia, South Carolina. Now, this is not the original SLED headquarters. We had originally been informed that Rutherford was at the SLED headquarters on Broad River Road, which is just across town. But our sources have since confirmed that he was in fact, at the Bush River Road Annex, appearing with two public corruption investigators, two investigators at SLED who are focused on these public corruption cases. We are also led to believe that during one of those sessions, Rutherford may have been subjected to a polygraph examination. And again, 2 days worth of interviews with these agents. We're not sure exactly what was discussed. Again, we're not sure exactly what they're focused on, but it does represent, according to our sources, a major escalation of this investigation into Todd Rutherford. We're also told that this case, which we were first alerted to back in August again, began to pick up steam a little over 2 months ago in October, when investigators reportedly stumbled upon some new information related to Rutherford's finances, presumably from the subpoena they got for his bank records, and that is what has at long last led to the questioning of Rutherford and, again, a potential polygraph examination of him. Where's all this going? That's a very good question, but it is happening at a time when Rutherford is finally beginning to face some long overdue pressure and scrutiny regarding his nefarious influence on South Carolina's judicial system. In fact, a number of lawmakers are pressuring, challenging South Carolina Speaker of the House Merle Smith to remove Rutherford from this panel of lawyer legislators that picks our judges, arguing that if this guy is as corrupt as everyone seems to believe he is, he has no business whatsoever picking South Carolina judges. Now, so far, Merle Smith, the Speaker of the House, has yet to remove Rutherford or any of the lawyer legislators from that panel. But in the event this investigation continues to advance, in the event that the allegations against Rutherford are found to bear fruit, Merle Smith is going to have to revisit that calculus. And in fact, a potential indictment of Todd Rutherford could be exactly the sort of thing that would lead reformers who have been calling for this broken system to be fixed for years. A Rutherford indictment could finally be the thing that forces House leaders not only to get serious about taking these lawyer legislators off of the judge-picking panel here in South Carolina, but more importantly, to create a model by which the public can trust its judges. We do not have that in South Carolina. We haven't had it in South Carolina, and we are never going to have it in South Carolina until lawyer legislators like Rutherford are removed from this position of influencing the very judges they appear before. Will it be an indictment that ultimately gets Rutherford, or will it be legitimate public pressure? We'll find out. Keep it tuned to Fitz News for the latest. So we posted a lot of content on this news outlet over the year that has shocked people, a lot of content that some would describe as graphic. And certainly a lot of that footage, you know, you find it barred on certain platforms. But, you know, we try to present this stuff, even though sometimes it's very difficult to look at. But one of the pieces that we published this week contained some footage was so jarring that we even had folks on social media saying they just couldn't watch it. And I'm talking about the story out of Lawrence County, South Carolina, where deputies with the Lawrence County Sheriff's Office shot and killed at least one dog in connection with an incident that was covered by our Andy Fancher. And Andy, you're here in the studio today. You've been covering the story. I want to go back before we get into this video and watch it, for those who haven't seen it, for those who have the stomach for it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you the genesis of this story. Tell us a little bit about how this landed on your plate.
Yeah, I mean, it landed in the Fitz News tip line by way of a public source, a woman who had dedicated 11 months of her time into investigating this situation, being 8th Judicial Circuit public defender Chelsea McNeil. She had submitted the FOIAs. She had obtained body and dash cam police video through sources beyond our understanding, obtained phone calls, 911 calls, dispatch calls, had done all the work, and surrendered the findings of her investigation to us, and we subsequently did a write-up, published.
And we get a lot of these, obviously. People send us information like this, raw files, raw footage, documents, but this public defender was not just providing the info, was she? There was another. She's going on the record with all this.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it took a little bit of convincing, because who just wants to surrender their name and face to a publication like Fitz News, right? No, but after a couple weeks of negotiating, we agreed to sit down, meet in person at her office, and we did that. We talked for rough upwards of 2 hours, I believe, at a nearby business, and we actually met twice on behalf of this topic in person, really just hashing out the details.
Tell me a little bit about her rationale. And again, you know, we don't always care why someone brings us information. If it's a legitimate story, if everything checks out, you know, we're going to publish it. But she had some motivation for raising this, right?
That is correct. So the bottom line here is that McNeil is an animal lover. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you watch the video, you will see she has her pet German Shepherd in her office, which she did not bring just for the shoot. That dog has a water bowl and a bed in that office for its, you know, full time.
We need some more dogs up in here, I think.
Yeah, do we need some dogs up in here? The dog pound, yeah. Right? But so she, on top of being just an animal lover, she prosecutes cases. Okay, mm-hmm. She prosecutes cases brought by four different sheriff's departments, including Lawrence County Sheriff's Office, LCSO. Mm-hmm. And because they are trying to prosecute her clients, mm-hmm. she tells us that that makes her exceedingly interested in what they are doing. Mm-hmm. And if they are doing something that is criminal, which she alleges that they have done here, she wants the people to know.
Yeah. Accountability. I can respect that. Let's walk through this footage, again, very graphic, but set it up for us, Andy. Give us the background of what we're getting ready to see, kind of what led up to it, which formed the basis of this report.
Of course. So according to the incident reports that we have in our possession, as well obtained through FOIA, it all started when a 92-year-old woman called dispatch. I believe it was 8:49 on a Saturday morning, while, of course, animal control is out. They operate Monday through Friday in Lawrence County. So 92-year-old calls to report that there are three dogs in her backyard, three large dogs, and that they were gunning for this dead goat that was in a pen in her backyard. And within the initial 911 call, she admits that the goat had died 3 days prior.
So the dogs didn't kill this goat?
No, according to the 92-year-old caller, who later spoke with McNeil, as well as the 911 calls, there is no indication that these dogs killed the goat. It was a carcass in a backyard, and three dogs who were unattended were reportedly going for it.
Gotcha. So what happens next? The call comes into the dispatch. What's the response from law enforcement?
So call comes into dispatch, and it looks like it was discarded. They actually referred her to Animal Control's voicemail, prompting her son to call the same dispatch operator, the same emergency services operator, the same dispatch operator, and raised a little bit more alarm. Now, this fella lives approximately 20 minutes away from his mother, which is where he also placed the call, saying, "Hey, my mom is pretty concerned at this moment. We've got three dogs in our backyard." And it's at this point that he actually surrenders a little bit of detail on these dogs. Mm-hmm. And about the only thing that's pertinent to our conversation here is he says, "We're dealing with a German Shepherd," mm-hmm. with a collar around his neck. Mm-hmm. That is just about the only detail that he gives the dispatch operator relating to these dogs, as well as, of course, saying they're probably somebody's pets.
So on that call, you've got then the Lawrence police show up. They're the first ones to respond, and the county, miraculously, according to your report, deduces that these dogs are a threat, a menace to public. They instruct the city to put them down?
So before we get to the city's response, what the dispatch operator does upon their conversation with the 92-year-old son is call Animal Control Sergeant Jeff Brown. And within that phone call that we also have, he says that the city should know about this. They have orders to kill these dogs on site because, based off of your description, a German Shepherd with a collar around his neck, these are a wild pack of dogs roaming Lawrence County. So he essentially gives the okay to shoot on site and asks the dispatch operator to deploy Lawrence Police Department, LPD, to the scene because it's going to take him a minute to get ready. Mm-hmm. Understand he's not working. He's on call, mm-hmm. Sergeant Brown. So according to the incident report from LPD, they are, of course, the first to arrive. We have one officer who's rounding the house. He comes upon the dogs. He does not see a threat. And apparently there isn't one because he was able to go back to his squad car, radio into dispatch, on top of another officer being there as well. So what we have are three dogs at this point in time who are sunbathing in the grass, unfeathered, mm-hmm. by two officers who are I don't know, at the end of the driveway. All right, monitoring them.
Yeah.
And yes, then enter stage right, Sergeant Brown and Lieutenant Timothy Byrd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lieutenant Timothy Byrd is the one who, as we see on this video, take his department-issued shotgun, which, according to an incident report, was equipped with a buckshot,
mm-hmm.
right? Walk slowly to the end of this driveway, again, looking dead at these dogs who were unmoved by two additional officers walking beyond a line of squad cars. Lieutenant Byrd takes a knee, racks one in the chamber, pulls the trigger.
Let's take a look at it, actually. And again, this is a graphic clip, so if you are averse to sensitive content, look away for a bit. But yeah, let's take a look at this clip, Andy.
There it goes.
A warning, the next part is graphic.
One of them has a collar on it, somebody's family pet, and they just took matters into their own hands and shot at them from 30 yards away.
Andy, obviously very graphic, very jarring footage. What was the reaction of Defender McNeil when she saw that?
I think her reaction is pretty on par with anybody who watches this video, which is, what the hell is going on here? Part of her reaction here and part of her response is that despite it being so graphic, I mean, listening to those dogs yelp, that's arguably the worst part. But part of what she wants people to do is watch the video. She wants as many people as possible to see what our public servants are doing behind the curtain. And her primary argument here is that if somebody else were to do this, not wearing a badge, not wearing a uniform, would they receive the same treatment?
Yeah, probably not. In fact, I think you got a clip of her. Why don't we roll real quick this clip of Public Defender McNeil addressing the shooting.
There it goes.
If somebody did the same exact thing that we see them doing on this video and they weren't wearing a badge, they would be arrested in a heartbeat. And because they're trying to prosecute my clients, I'm interested in what they are doing. And if they are acting in a way that is kosher, okay. But if they are acting in a criminal manner themselves, then their credibility is shot. And that needs to be exposed to juries.
Andy, amazing work on the story. Great package. If you haven't checked this full package, by the way, go to fitsnews.com. You want to see the standard of video reporting that we're doing now. Andy Fancher, Dylan Nolan, check it out on fitsnews.com if you haven't watched already. But I wanted to ask you this, Andy. We got a little grief on social media this week. The sheriff of Lawrence County fired back saying we never contacted him about the story. But I think you got some receipts here, don't you?
According to the receipts, I emailed Lawrence County Sheriff's Office at the only email available on their website
mm-hmm.
before 11 a.m. on November 15th, 20 days prior to our publishing of this report.
In fact, we're looking at that email right now. You're much more polite than I am, man. I'm a little more of a a dick when I'm emailing some of these folks. But no, and I want to also say this, you know, Sheriff Reynolds, come on, man. If it weren't for Fitz News, your predecessor would still be in office. So come on. You know better than that, man. And you can also pick up the phone and just call. I mean, we've got an open microphone policy here at Fitz News. Anybody with any sort of take on our coverage, positive, negative, hey, they want to say we got it wrong. But frankly, Andy, in a story like this, I don't know how anybody is going to want to defend what we just watched.
Right. And I can tell you here that at the current rate of things, this won't be the last report we do on the Lawrence County Sheriff's Office.
Well, and we will obviously, we'll double check this time and make sure they have every opportunity. But Andy, excellent work on this story. And again, holding those in power, whether it's prosecutors, judges, lawmakers, or police officers, holding those in power accountable, it's what we do. Great example of it.
So, Will, you had the pleasure this week of attending the Republican presidential primary debate, the final Republican presidential primary debate in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You had quite literally a front row seat to the democratic process here. I think first let's get into a little bit of analysis, just kind of to break down who is on the stage, where they are at this point in the campaign. And then maybe I'd like to ask you a couple questions of things that you saw with your own eyes while you were there, things that folks didn't get to see if they watched the debate on TV. So maybe you could bring that personal experience home to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to, Dylan. This obviously the fourth Republican debate and the smallest in terms of the number of participants on the stage. Over the last three debates, they've gradually tightened the criteria for candidates who are appearing. I think it was 6% polling. You had to hit 6% in the polls prior to this debate. And so not only did you have sort of a narrowing of the field based on the threshold, but also so many candidates have dropped out. Former Vice President Mike Pence is no longer in the race. U.S. Senator Tim Scott had dropped out since the last debate. So there are four candidates on stage. You had former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, probably polling lowest of the four that appeared. Ohio entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, the anti-woke CEO who we interviewed a few months back when he came through South Carolina. Former U.N. ambassador, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. And then last but not least, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. So those were the four on the stage. And again, none of them at this point polling within a country mile of Donald Trump nationally or in any of the early voting states, but a pitch battle there for that number two spot amongst those candidates.
Right. And we'd seen Ron DeSantis. He was the predicted favorite, as it were, for the number two spot. He had a lot of support from the massive financial donors that you need to win with the establishment path, at least, in the GOP. However, he got on the big stage, and it's just something about his personality, the way he answered questions, the fact that he was walking around with lifts in his boots, trying to be taller. All of these things kind of culminated to Ron just not having it. So that opened up a massive lane for Nikki Haley, who has none of those problems. I think that she's great on camera. She will say whatever needs to be said to keep that donor group appeased. And she has a massive appeal. I mean, she's one of the highest achieving women in United States politics to this point. So we've seen that. And this debate was really a fight between those two. I think Chris Christie joining in on the side of Nikki Haley in many instances. And by the way, you know, he used the word blowhard in the debate, so I'll bring that word up. I think that he's been a blowhard in many instances throughout the political process, but I actually enjoyed his contributions in the debate, even if I didn't agree with a lot of what he was saying. I thought that he was kind of a voice of reason, but he was aligned with Team Haley. And then it was almost DeSantis and Ramaswamy just raining blows down on top of her. The question is, you know, this was a bloody debate. There was a lot of, this was the most conflict that we've seen in any of these GOP debates. Did any of them do what they needed to do to cross the line? If we're going to talk about the ground game, we're going to talk about the first three primary elections, New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina. Those are the three states that these candidates are focusing on. I would say in our home state, the state that I care the most about, Donald Trump, if you look at the polling, far and away, he's going to blow Nikki Haley out of the water. He's going to blow DeSantis out of the water. Do you think that either of them have a chance after last night of doing what they need to do in Ohio, doing what they need to do in New Hampshire to potentially change the way that this primary goes?
You mean Iowa?
Thank
Iowa,
you.
New Hampshire. Yeah. No. Short answer, no. I mean, I don't think anything happened on the stage last night that made
Donald... Wasn't already baked into the cake?
Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump is the presumptive Republican nominee for president, period. That was the case going into the first debate, the second debate, the third debate, the fourth debate, and it remains the case leaving the fourth debate. What I saw, though, and I felt, I mean, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. I mean, it was a bash Nikki night. Nikki Haley's got a lot of momentum, had a big endorsement, which we covered, went on the ground with that Americans for Prosperity endorsement.
And just so folks understand, they bring the thunder. They have the largest ground game of any Republican organization. They like to call themselves a grassroots organization. And certainly they are. They hit the ground hard. However, I think grassroots has a connotation of, you know, this is an organically spun up thing. This is not. This is professional. AFP is bringing in the thunder of the GOP establishment. So them coming in and backing Nikki Haley, that's some serious support. So that's not something to write off. But continue.
No, not at all. I mean, it's money, it's voter targeting.
And you and I understand that, but I think that folks at home who don't have, you know, live steeped in politics might think, okay, why do I care about AFP? What even is this? But it is serious.
No, absolutely. I mean, if you hear it at home, oh, some group endorsed her, who cares? I mean, yeah, absolutely. People who don't understand sort of the depth of that organization, the financial resources of that organization, the technological sophistication of that organization. Again, we saw that firsthand when we went out with them the day after they endorsed Nikki Haley and watched them at work. It's an incredible operation. And it's, as you mentioned, a huge shot in the arm for former Ambassador Haley's candidacy. But one of the things you pointed out, you talked about those donors, whether it's the Koch money, whether it's the other billionaire backers that Nikki Haley is starting to corral. That was a point that she was hit on relentlessly during this debate. Both Ramaswamy and DeSantis hammering her away, basically saying this is why she caves on the issues that are important to you and me. This is why that every time she's put on the spot on an issue, she backs down, whereas they will stand firm their case. And so I thought that contrast was on display. Now, Haley's rejoinder was, oh, you're just jealous you're not getting the money.
I thought that was one of her best moments of the debate, because you know what? If you understand the situation, you know she is right. Ron DeSantis was playing for that exact same group, and he came out and talked like a speak and spell and walked like C-3PO, and they took their money and gave it to Nikki Haley, and she's right. He's jealous. The big difference, I would say, is somebody looking at the field is, okay, when Ron DeSantis was governor, he governed very conservatively. He governed in a way that the Republican primary voters, I think, would actually appreciate, whereas Nikki Haley, a moderate at best.
Well, two things can be true at once. You're absolutely right. She nailed it on the response that they're jealous, but they are right when they say—
Oh, yeah. She's taken the money, and she's going to do what she needs to earn that money.
Yeah. And in fact, I thought it was Ramaswamy was most adept, I think, at needling Haley, and in fact pointed out that, you know, right after you receive all this special interest money, you take these meetings with the big bankers, the first thing you do is come out and endorse a national social media registry where people have to register by name to post their thoughts online. And she just got hammered on that by Vivek
Ramaswamy. She should be hammered. That's Orwellian. It's not American. It's disturbing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, DeSantis also kind of drove that nail in a little further by saying, not only did you say it, you made it clear this was going to be one of the first things you do taking office. This is going to be one of your priorities.
Right. Where do her interests lie? They lie with not with us regular small people.
Yeah. And they hammered that home. So I think you're right. Yes, DeSantis definitely jealous he didn't get that money, but also absolutely correct that while he has a record of standing up for these principles, Haley does not. And I thought the best encapsulation of that during this fourth debate in Alabama was the exchange over the bathroom bills. And they just hammered Nikki Haley for failing to sign a bill that would require male students to go in the boys' room, female students to go in the girls' room. You know, imagine how complicated that is. But DeSantis pointed out, you know, I signed it, you didn't. And in fact, not only did she not sign it, she actually got up and said that the government wasn't going to get involved in that debate. Nikki on stage claimed that she had never said that, and then the very next day, DeSantis' team pumped out
much
a video.
Like our previous segment, he brought the receipts.
Brought the receipts, exactly. And so, but you know, these all of them, you know, they lie literally on, you know, reflexively. It's
required to be a politician. You have to cheat on your wife. You have to lie looking into a camera, just you know, as if it's nothing.
But that's why, to me anyway, as somebody again watching this with an open mind, I think trying to say, you know, are we going to endorse anybody in this cycle? That's why to me Ramaswamy was the most impressive, because I didn't get the impression that this was a guy lying to me. In fact, I got the impression that this was a guy telling truths, maybe even some I wasn't ready to hear, didn't want to hear, that are uncomfortable.
I think he articulates Donald Trump's message in a way that Donald Trump's not intelligent enough to do himself. Where is he coming from with that? I'm not exactly sure. And here's my question to you on Vivek. What do you think he's gunning for here? Because at this point, he's not gunning for president of the United States. The poll numbers just aren't there. He has no path to victory as I see it. I mean, what is he going to do? Beat Donald Trump at being Donald Trump? It's just not going to happen. Do you think he's going for VP cabinet spot? Do you think he's going for president next cycle? What do you see here?
You know, I don't know what the long range plan is, because, you know, you listen to him and at that debate, you know, total unfiltered.
He's swinging.
I mean, yeah, but here's the other thing about him. I mean, he's bombastic. He certainly can get abrasive at times. And, you know, there were moments during the debate where you could, and, you know, I'm sitting on the front row, you can feel kind of the tension from behind, and then it will erupt into boos and people shouting at him. And he's like, you know what, you guys are just serving the same puppets.
And that worked for Donald Trump in 2016.
Yeah, and so, but to me, it wasn't just kind of the boldness and the bravado and not caring who he pissed off. To me, it was the intellectual depth behind the arguments. He was the only one on that stage, the only one who can go deeper. I want to remind you of an episode of The West Wing, 10-word answers. And it talks about how 10-word answers are what you're supposed to have in politics. But in that show, the authors pointed out that's just the tip of the spear. And in one of the presidential debates, the guy says to the opponent, give me the next 10 words. You give me the next 10 words, I'll drop out of this race right now. Tell me how you're going to do it. Don't just give me the soundbite. And Ramaswamy, it's almost like, you know, not
that was his 10-word moment when he said to Nikki Haley, and for the folks who didn't watch the debate that are still listening to us prattle on about it, he asked her, what are the three provinces in Ukraine which you would send our sons and daughters to die for? And she just stared at the camera blankly. She had no clue. He gutted her.
Absolutely. And then proceeded to continue to gut her throughout the rest of the debate. I mean, she was rattled. She was rattled at that debate. There's no doubt about it. And I think that Ramaswamy, of all the candidates up there, took full advantage of that.
And I think that Ramaswamy, maybe earlier in the previous debates, had come in with this strategy. And I think it was DeSantis who nailed him on changing his strategy debate to debate, changing his personality, as it were, debate to debate. But I think earlier in this process, he might have thought, okay, I can get this nomination. Vivek is a very numbers-based man. I think that he looked at this and said, I'm still in this stage, like I'm on this stage like Chris Christie is, to act as an analog against Trump, to damage Trump's enemies. I think that's what he was there to do, and I think that he did that job well. I think he did it at the expense of his own likability. I had multiple people I know text me, people who aren't, you know, as politically involved as we are, but who are voters, who texted me saying that they thought he went overboard.
Well, maybe I'm just an asshole, but I don't take it that way. I mean, to me, he's saying things that nobody else is going to say that need to be said. And the other thing I thought that was interesting, he pointed this out after the debate, you know, the whole shtick about identity politics, and he really bashed Nikki Haley for, you know, exploiting identity politics. And then he pointed out after the debate, hey, you know, if I'm tough on her, you know, it's all of a sudden I'm anti-woman. You don't have that debate when people go after and attack, you know, a male candidate. I mean, so I understand the disconnect, and I'm glad that he's saying those things. And frankly, you know, the likability, I don't want a likable president. I want an effective president. I don't want a likable executive. I want an executive who is going to get things done, who is going to consistently uphold the principles that I believe. And none of the people on that stage that I saw anyway, with the exception of DeSantis upon occasion, came close to Ramaswamy in hitting that core goal of what you really want out of your president.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting. And if we see a Republican in the White House after this electoral cycle, I think that he will have some position of power within that administration, because if we see a Republican in the White House, it's most likely going to be Donald Trump. And he has certainly put in his time, put in his work for the Donald Trump campaign here in this cycle. I'd be very interested to see how he governs. We've heard a lot of words from him thus far, but he's been a man in the political arena for really not too long. Some of those attacks that he started out as his life as a Democrat, he will vehemently deny, but I'm not so sure that they're untrue. And I've seen the video, I think, that a lot of people have seen of Vivek for about 2 minutes straight just ripping very long portions of speeches from Barack Obama. So I really would like to see, okay, let's make Vivek a man in the arena. Let's give him some power, and see what he does with it.
Yeah.
And because we need leaders who can speak truth to power.
We do. And I do want to say one thing on that score. I'm not a Chris Christie fan. Probably from an ideological standpoint, he was the candidate on the stage I agreed with the least. And certainly his contention that, you know, this trans movement, that children should be subjected to some of these abusive procedures, I just can't get with that on any level. However, I will say this, the guy to his credit, like Ramaswamy, didn't care when he was being booed. And I think we've got to look at some of these politicians who are just so addicted to the applause, who will say anything to get the crowd behind them, who just, they're so addicted to that. I loved seeing two guys on that stage who just didn't care, who didn't care. They were going to say what they thought. And so Christie, actually,
That's what I was saying earlier about his performance. I respect that about him. I don't agree with most of where he was coming from on the issues, but I thought that he had a very respectable performance.
Yeah, and also, you know, and in fairness to Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, I don't think he had a terrible night. I think he was very inconsistent. I thought there were moments where he just came off as the guy everyone thought he was going to be when he was, you know, polling within.
Old DeSantis is what I've seen him referred to as, you know, in some political articles talking about this phenomenon.
Yeah, but I mean, this was a guy who was polling within single digits of Donald Trump at one point mm-hmm. in this process, and there's a reason for that. And I think we saw glimpses of that on the stage in Alabama earlier this week, but he was, again, inconsistent. But here's the thing that I found very interesting about DeSantis' performance. I noticed I was actually sitting next to, I had Vivek's wife on one side and Casey DeSantis a seat down.
What a seat.
On the other side. Yeah, it was pretty cool, but... I never knew how involved those spouses were in terms of like getting active during the debate. Like they tell you not to cheer and everything, but man, those wives were not listening to that rule. They were cheering. And I did notice Vivek's wife at one point was cheering for DeSantis a couple times. I kind of asked her, I was like, are you cheering for the other guy? She's like, well, he made good points. So it was interesting to see that too. But yeah, it was quite an environment. And I got to say, you know, I hadn't seen Nikki Haley in person for 14 years, 15 years. That was the first time I'd seen her in person for a while. So it's kind of interesting seeing her again for the first time in a long time.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, we got to address the elephant in the room, and I'm not talking about Chris Christie here. You, years ago.
Fat shaming that poor guy.
Somebody should have given a little shame, but
well, you know, he got fat shamed during the debate by Ramaswamy. Told him to walk off the stage.
Off the stage and enjoy a nice meal. Yeah, ooh. That was... this is why I think Vivek went a little over the top. I mean, that's just, I can make a joke on a podcast. He's running for president, but that's why I say that I think that he came in there just throwing punches to throw them because that's not something you do if you want to become the next president. But you submitted an affidavit. What year was this?
2010.
So a long time ago now. And you were talking about having an extramarital, on Nikki's behalf, affair with Nikki Haley while you worked for her as she was running for governor.
That's right.
And you said that she noticed you, you know, partially through this debate. I think that you know, she knows that there is a large chance that this becomes national news at some point. And I don't know, you know, with you being there in the room that night, I thought that it could come to a head then. It obviously didn't. You're here right now, and the world is still largely unaware of this, but it brings up an interesting point, and it really made me reflect on, okay, what's going to happen should this become national news? Because this is something as a news outlet that we've tried to, and I think you've done an admirable job, and sure, you have your feelings about Nikki Haley's policy, but when it comes to straight news pieces, I think that we've been nothing but fair in our coverage of her, and I really admire you for that, but at the same time, you were a player on the stage then, you're a player on the stage now, and she's only, her star has only risen.
Yeah.
And I think that you, am I right in saying you would stand by every word of that affidavit that you filed in 2010 right now?
Yeah, let's start with the affidavit. I mean, obviously, nothing to add, nothing to detract, nothing to amend. It true then, true now, and, you know, whatever happens with that nationally, got to be ready for that. But as far as Fitz News, as far as how we cover these candidates... Yeah, I am proud of how we've covered Nikki Haley. I mean, she's been right on a lot of things. Entitlement spending, she's been the only Republican in the field that's really sounded a voice of reason on entitlements. And by the way, her willingness to do that pushed DeSantis, some of the other candidates, to better ground on that issue. And so I gave her credit for that on several occasions. Obviously, we covered her big endorsement with AFP this past week. We're not going to minimize good news for her because of some historical, you know, past relationship. I mean, the way that you lose credibility in this business is when you allow those things to color your coverage, to make you say or do things differently than you would have otherwise done had those things not existed. So yeah, I can't go back however many years and undo things in the past, whether it be relationships or how I handled them. I can't, there's nothing I can do about
it. Well, to be clear, you were not affiliated at the time. It was Nikki.
True, but you know, I mean, what's the old biblical, by the biblical definition, you know, every bit as guilty as she was, but again, it to the credibility.
But you're not running for president of the United States.
No.
And that's what is interesting to me about this situation is I think that we can agree, okay, Bill Clinton, that was one of the first big sex scandals. Obviously, American presidents have been sleeping around for a very long time. You want to look at FDR, he was sleeping around, JFK. Obviously, Bill Clinton, that one came into the public. You look at Donald Trump, that man is such a philanderer. He's with all sorts of different women. The question is, with a female candidate, will that play differently?
I don't know.
It's uncharted territory. Right. We don't know. Hillary Clinton was such a sexless woman that we never got to find that out. But Nikki Haley, quite the opposite. I will be very interested if she, at some point in time, becomes the Republican presidential nominee, which, if not this cycle, she has certainly positioned herself.
Absolutely.
I mean, she is going to be on the short list for a very long time as far as presidential contenders with the way that she's handled herself. If she gets that national nomination, there's no way that does not get weaponized against her.
Yeah.
And I just hope, I have every faith that we'll be as fair as in our coverage of this incident as possible.
At the end of the day, what happened, and truth is truth, and, you know, you can...
Voters can take it how they'll take it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I've already seen a few of the kind of preemptive stories, you know, of sort of seeking to inoculate her against that by kind of coming at me, and that's fine. I didn't handle it perfectly. I didn't handle it as well as I should have. If I had it to do over again, I would have handled it much differently. I don't think I would have been as forthcoming, perhaps, as I was. I don't know, but I can't go back and rehandle it because, you know, what's on the table's on the table. And like I said, you know, I'm not backing down.
Right, it's not 2010 anymore.
Yeah, it's not. And so I'm not backing down from it, but I'm also not looking to make it something. I'm just trying to cover the
race. Thing is, it's not up to you.
No, that's...
It's an affidavit that at the end of the day you stand by that has been public for more than a decade, and she's running for president of the United States. So no matter what you want to do about it, no matter how your news outlet handles it, it has a huge potential to explode.
No, no doubt. And I think, you know, right now it's just the Laura Loomers of the world that are...
The crazy Trump world people who are going to put every hit on Nikki Haley that they can and that nobody's going to pay attention to. It's when Lester Holt's talking about it that it's real news.
Well, and, you know, we'll figure out how to handle it at that point. But the one thing I know how to handle is a presidential race in South Carolina. And the first in the South primary, our news outlet is going to continue to cover these folks based on what we believe, you know, is the best interest of citizens of South Carolina, citizens of this country. And where Haley is right, we will praise her and have praised her. Where she is wrong, China, on this social media Orwellian apparatus she wants to create on her first day in office, dead wrong. We'll call her out on that. Where she's been hypocritical in the past and been busted, like DeSantis busted her on this bathroom bill, absolutely we'll call her out. In fact, we got a story coming up this coming week on several state representatives who watched that debate and we're calling her out on her hypocrisy on that bathroom issue. You know, Nikki has a long history of saying one thing and doing another. I hate to say it. And I think that the real record, but the real record she has to contend with, I think, as a presidential candidate, isn't Will Folks' affidavit from 2010. It's the record of her time in office in South Carolina and how she ran as a Tea Party candidate in 2010 and then went and governed as a Chamber of Commerce, left of center Republican, who during that process, again, so many hypocrisies, so many double standards, so many just golden opportunities for people to hammer on. I mean, Syrian refugees.
And I think you're right. I mean, your assertion here is clearly right because that's what this primary has been about. And credit to the Republican operatives who have not made it about something else. I think that if it gets to a national race, suddenly nobody cares how she governed as governor of South Carolina, whether she was conservative enough, because it becomes Democrat or Republican, and the Democrat operatives are going to dig that up in half a second.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's going to be a massive torpedo.
Absolutely. Well, you know.
And that's to the Republican operatives, that's what I say. dig it up now. If it's going to be disqualifying, get it into the bloodstream before she is the nominee.
Yeah.
Don't hide it.
Yeah.
But nobody asked me.
Well,
Sharing your guts here. Obviously, that's a little bit of a tough question.
No, man, this is fun. It's fun because I'm usually the one doling out those questions to the person in the other chair. It's kind of cool to be on this side of it.
Well, I figured I should probably ask the questions on this one because I figured there's a couple questions that it's hard for you to ask. Mm-hmm. Being that you're a party, it's almost like Judge Newman having to step down and get on the witness stand here.
No, but again, I'm glad that you see how we've covered this race, and I know you.
No, I'm proud to work here because I think you've handled it respectably.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was just going to say. You wouldn't be here if we were handling it any other way. So,
well, we'll keep everybody at home obviously informed as 2024 that race towards a very important presidential voting day continues. We'll keep you up to speed.
I want to thank everyone for tuning in. If you haven't already, please like us, subscribe on YouTube. That helps us get to that next level. And also, if you haven't already, only $8 a month for the kind of coverage we were just talking about that's so important. Subscribe to FitzNews.com. It's only $8 a month. And again, one thing I want to point out on that, so many times watching these debates, or if you don't watch these debates, you never know that what you're getting from the mainstream press, you never know whether it's the truth or not. But I got to say one thing. That I'm super impressed with the people that work for this media outlet. I was at that debate in Tuscaloosa, as we just discussed, but I read the article that was published on our site by Mark Powell. He's one of our top political writers. He's a guy who previews these debates and recaps that debates, and it was awesome to read an account on our site that was exactly what transpired. So if you want the real take of what happened at these events, if you want to know the unbiased, unfiltered, straight truth on what happened, come to FitzNews.com because Mark Powell's article was exactly representative of what happened. And I can't say the same for so many of the mainstream media outlets that covered it. Thanks for joining us. We will catch you next time on The Week in Review.